Iran tells the UN nuclear watchdog that it will stop the implementation of the additional protocol and voluntary measures with a visit into JCPOA as of February 23rd. Palestinian media says Israeli forces have arrested two Hamas officials and three Islamic Jihad movement activists in the occupied West Bank. And based on the United Nations, Yemen's warring sides have failed to make any progress in their latest round of negotiations over a prisoner swap. Hey everyone, welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behzad Zajafi. Good to have you with us. Iran's ambassador to Vienna-based international organization says that no supervisor inspection or access beyond the safeguards agreement will be granted to the International Atomic Energy Agency. Kazem Gharibabadi made that comment following a visit by the head of the IAEA, Rafael Grossi, to Tehran. Gharibabadi says that Tehran will stop the voluntary implementation of the additional protocol in line with the country's parliamentary law. Grossi also confirmed the reduction of Tehran's cooperation with his agency. However, the IAEA chief announced that the agency has reached a deal with Tehran to continue necessary verification and monitoring activities in the country.
Basically, what we have agreed is the following. In the first place, we reconfirmed that Iran will continue to implement the Comprehensive Safeguards Agreement without any limitation, as they have been doing so far. In the second place, we agreed that in view of the law, and in particular the provision that establishes limitations, we reached a temporary bilateral technical understanding whereby the agency is going to continue its necessary verification and monitoring activities for a period of up to 3 months.
Grossi says that the new agreement will be reviewed constantly and can be suspended or extended. The IAEA chief noted that there still will be some number of inspections as per the new deal, but there would be things that we would lose, as he said. Grossi made a two-day visit to Tehran and met with senior officials. The visit came ahead of Tehran's February 23rd deadline to block snap inspections of its nuclear sites in response to U.S. sanctions. Earlier, we were joined by our Vienna correspondent, Humay Lezgi, who provided us with some details about the new inspection agreement between the IAEA and Iran.
I think the gist of that statement that we heard Mr. Grossi speak about is that the IAEA has managed to retain its capacity to continue, in its own words, the necessary monitoring and verification activities up to a period of 3 months. But what does this mean? He didn't really go into the details, but I did get another statement a bit after that from the Iranian Atomic Energy Organization concerning this understanding between the two sides. And in that statement from the Iranian Atomic Energy Organization, it said that what is meant by the statement that the agency will be able to continue its monitoring and verification activities that are necessary is that Iran is going to record and retain information of certain activities and from certain monitoring equipment and keep that information to itself, and that the agency will not have any access to this information. It will solely stay with Iran. If after 3 months sanctions are lifted, then Iran will provide this information to the agency, and if not, then this information will be permanently deleted. Now, this is not something that Mr. Grossi said, but it was in a statement that I read and that was given out by the Iranian Atomic Energy Organization. So
Tehran says that the fate of Iranian nationals detained in the U.S. has always been a priority for it and that it's following up the case seriously. Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh says that most of those prisoners are being held in dreadful conditions under false pretexts. He said that this cruel policy is a legacy of former U.S. President Donald Trump. The spokesman said that the new administration has still not taken any measures in that connection. However, he said that the U.S. has sent messages through the Swiss embassy in Tehran, as well as other envoys, to resolve the issue. It said that Iran's proposal of exchanging prisoners with the U.S. is still valid, referring to 2018 proposal by Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif. An Iranian COVID vaccine has wrapped up its first human trial phase, and this as Iran is facing the fourth wave of the COVID pandemic, and local biotech firms are scrambling to get a viable vaccine to the market. Youssef Jalali reports.
As the coronavirus resurges in Iran, domestic biotech firms are in a race against time to get a vaccine to the market. Among the eight viable candidates, Coviran is now ahead in the race. Produced by the headquarters for executing Imam Khomeini's order, the vaccine started its first phase of the human trials in December last year. And now, as developers say, the first step was a success.
The first phase was to test whether or not the vaccine is safe to be injected to everyone. So we inoculated 56 volunteers in two stages, and the good news is no one has displayed any serious side effect as a result of the jabs.
Two more phases are left for the vaccine to get the ultimate approval. In the second phase, 400 volunteers will get the jabs. This time, the aim is to assess how much immunity the vaccine will make against the virus.
In the second phase, we are going to have something like 400 people, 100 between 50 and 75, the average of the age, and the other 300 above 18 and until 50. If we would, we will get emergency permit like other vaccines to combine phase two and three.
While the UK variant of the coronavirus has reached Iran, experts say the Iranian vaccine is effective against the mutated virus.
This vaccine is whole virus that is inactivated. And that's why if there is any more mutation in the virus, this whole virus vaccines may be more effective than those that have just a simple antigen or whatever.
Earlier this month, Iran unveiled another homegrown vaccine dubbed COVPARS, which is now undergoing the first phase of the human trials. Administered through injection and inhalation, COVPARS is an mRNA recombinant vaccine that reconstructs a harmless piece of the virus's spike protein. This as the second batch of Russia's Sputnik V arrived in Iran last week amid an ongoing voluntary vaccination in the country. Iran's government says it does not favor Iranian vaccines over foreign counterparts, and the priority is to start the nationwide vaccination campaign as soon as possible.
Now that the Coviran vaccine has proved safe for mass vaccination, the next step is to test its efficacy. Experts say this will be made clear in the second phase of the human trial, which will kickstart in almost a month. Youssef Jalali, Tehran.
Welcome back. Let's move on. Palestinian media saying that Israel has arrested several activists and officials of resistance groups after raiding the occupied West Bank. I talked to our correspondent, Mona Kandil, and she has some more detail on that story.
Well, according to a Palestinian prisoners group, in 1 week, Israeli forces arrested the three senior Hamas leaders. Today, we are speaking about Mustafa al-Shannar. He's a senior official in Hamas in the West Bank city of Nablus, and he's also a lecturer. He's also a former prisoner, and he was detained by the Israeli forces. Also, the Israeli forces detained another Hamas figure. He's one of the former Palestinian prisoners, and he's well known for his ongoing activities, Omar al-Hanbali. During today's arrest raids, Israeli forces raided a number of Palestinian cities and villages in Jenin, in Bethlehem, Al-Khalil, also known as Hebron, detaining more 18 Palestinians, including members of the Jihad movement. It seems, according to Palestinian experts, the Israeli forces had been in the last few days attacking Hamas figures and officials, as well as other senior figures, in order maybe to not to allow Palestinians go to the upcoming elections Palestinians and for the first time Hamas and Fatah, as well as the other Palestinian factions, have agreed that elections would be held after 15 years. However, experts are saying that Israel is trying to sabotage the upcoming elections by attacking the well-known figures and detaining senior officials from Hamas and maybe the jihad movement.
Palestinian refugees in the Gaza Strip have held a protest rally against further aid cuts by UNRWA. They say that the reduction will negatively affect their health, education, and humanitarian relief. Nashef Shannon has the story.
Palestinian refugees in the blockaded Gaza Strip demonstrated in front of UNRWA aid distribution centers against cuts to vital services and assistance by the UN agency. UNRWA provides education, health, and welfare services to millions of Palestinian refugees in the occupied West Bank, Jerusalem al-Quds, the Gaza Strip, Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan. As of Sunday, UNRWA implemented further aid cuts to Palestinian refugees, citing budget deficit, but Palestinians maintain that cuts are merely political.
These cuts are purely political and have nothing to do with a budget deficit. Palestinian refugees will continue to fight these conspiracies against the Palestinians and rights until we achieve the right of return. UNRWA must stop these measures that aim to undermine the issue of refugees and the Palestinian cause.
The Israeli regime has been campaigning to defund the UN agency in an attempt to end the refugees' right of return. The crisis deepened after former U.S. President Donald Trump decided to cancel funding to UNRWA in 2018.
UNRWA has been cutting back its services over the years. What they gave us today is not enough to feed our families. Every time we get less food items. Today they gave me a small bag of sugar, which is barely enough to make tea for a few days. We are extremely poor and we want UNRWA to restore all of our food aid in order for us to survive.
The vast majority of Gazans are refugees who were kicked out of their towns and villages upon the establishment of the Israeli regime in 1948. Palestinian refugees who suffered for more than seven decades say UNRWA cuts will only increase their plight amid the coronavirus pandemic.
The cuts come at a time that Palestinian refugees are suffering worse humanitarian conditions because of the COVID-19 pandemic. UNRWA must increase aid instead of cutting it. Palestinian refugees in the Gaza Strip are extremely poor and are the worst hit by these cuts.
Over 1.3 million Palestinian refugees live in the Gaza Strip, and their hardships have increased under the Israeli blockade.
Palestinian refugees say that as long as they are displaced and dispossessed, UNRWA should provide them with all due services without any cuts. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Now let's take it to some other news. The UN saying that Yemen's warring sides have failed to make any progress in their latest round of negotiations over a prisoner swap. The UN Special Envoy for Yemen says that the two sides have not agreed to release the prisoners. Martin Griffiths urged the parties to continue discussions and consultations as well as implementing those they had agreed upon. He also called for the unconditional release of all sick, elderly, and children detainees. Delegations from Yemen's Ansar movement and Saudi-backed former government resumed prisoner swap talks in the Jordanian capital, Amman, in January. The UN-backed talks are the latest efforts to help revive the stalled peace negotiations last held in Switzerland in 2018. Last October, two sides released more than 1,000 detainees under the agreement. Correspondent Sana Abdul Latif al-Washali says that there were not enough international efforts to minimize the suffering of the Yemeni people.
They're not depending on organizations or the international efforts to end the war in Yemen. You know, our military operations are going on now, but Yemenis are calling for the release of detainees. The head of the National Committee for Prisoners Affairs said that they have agreed on the unconditional release for the elderly, the sick, the children, and also the civilians, but the other side refused proposal. We believe that the international efforts are not enough until the moment to end the suffering of the Yemeni people. doing the suffering of the Yemeni people, and they depend, or the Yemenis are depending actually on the military operations to make new pressures on the Saudi-led coalition to move a little bit toward a particular solution.
Now, international charitable organization Oxfam has accused the British government of prolonging the war in Yemen by continuing arms sales to Saudi Arabia. The UK-based group says that London's exports, including air-to-air refueling equipment to Riyadh, can facilitate airstrikes on Yemen. Oxfam's officials called on Britain to end arms sales that may be used against civilians or exacerbate the Yemen humanitarian crisis. Earlier this month, the new U.S. administration announced it would freeze arms sales to Saudi Arabia to avoid the current humanitarian catastrophe in Yemen. The UK, however, refused to follow suit. Last year, Britain authorized the export of some $2 billion worth of arms to the Arab Kingdom, a move that critics slammed as immoral. Thousands of people have once again taken to the streets of Myanmar amid a general strike call by different groups against a recent military coup d'etat and deadly crackdown. Businesses were shut in major cities, including in Yangon and Mandalay, after calls for people to stop work and protest. And that despite a warning by the ruling junta of more deadly crackdown on rallies. Myanmar has been the scene of street protests since the military seized power on the 1st of February and arrested political leaders, including Aung San Suu Kyi. At least four people have been killed ever since. 3 weeks after the coup, the junta has failed to stop the rallies and its civil disobedience movement. The generals have promised to hold new elections, but tensions escalated over the deadly crackdown on rallies and the arrest of anti-coup activists. A new revelation has indicated that New York Police Department and the FBI were behind the 1965 killing of African-American Muslim leader Malcolm X. Members of the leader's family have released a letter written by a deceased undercover NYPD police officers. It details how the officer's supervisors pressured him to lure two members of Malcolm X's security detail to commit crimes that led to their arrest. According to the contents of the letter, the arrest just days before the fatal shooting kept the security from guarding the door of the venue where Malcolm X was preparing to deliver a speech. The letter described the matter as a conspiracy by the FBI and NYPD to have Malcolm X killed. Three people were convicted in the shooting. But historians have long contended that the wrong men have been sentenced. A short time ago, we're joined by a correspondent in Washington, D.C., Wyatt Reed, who provided us with some details on the latest revelation about Malcolm X's assassination.
The Manhattan District Attorney's Office has said publicly that this investigation is ongoing. That's what a phenomenon, you know, characteristic of this trial that his family has long contended has really been more of a cover-up than an investigation. So, you know, really, I think this revelation in terms of the significance, it's pretty extraordinary. People in the United States have long known, for example, that the United States government was behind, for example, the assassination of Fred Hampton. A civil jury in 1999 found that the U.S. government was liable for the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This is really sort of the first time that we have some real substantive evidence that shows that the New York Police Department, and indeed, according to the former undercover police officer, Woods, Raymond Woods, that according to him, not just the New York Police Department, but the FBI was actually involved in this assassination.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Second phase of the revolution.
Of the revolution. Of the revolution.
Leap in production. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. Natural resources and mines, as a very important part of national assets of a country, play the role of engines for leap in production and economic growth. These resources are capable of turning into funds, and an optimal use of them can secure independence of a country, plenitude of products, and buttress national revenues and per capita income. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in some parts of the second phase of the revolution, enumerating economic potentials of the country, says, Iran, having 1% of the world population, enjoys 7% of the global mineral reserves, massive underground resources, exceptional geographical situation between the East, the West, the North, and the South, great national market, great regional market of 15 neighbors with 600 million people, long coastlines, fertile land with various agricultural and horticultural products, huge and diverse economy are some of the capacities of the country. Many of the capacities have remained intact. Iran's copper resources are a valuable opportunity and one of the main pillars of leap in production in the country. CEO of Iran's national copper company, Ardeshir Saad Mohammadi, says, it is expected that within the coming 4 years, Iran's copper production capacity will reach 550,000 tons annually to gain more share of the global exports market. In view of this, several important projects have been exploited in the current year. The project of development of anode copper in Khatun Abad, the project of construction of concentrate copper depot, the project of construction of acid in Khatun Abad, and the project of construction of oxygen production factory in Khatun Abad are the examples that have become operational at Shahr Babak Copper Complex in Kerman Province. President Hassan Rouhani is stressing the need for refraining from crude sale of products, called the mines, as one of the main pillars for leap in production, and express hope that good measures would be taken in the current year in exploration, sale, and handing over mineral resources to the private sector and prevention of crude sale. Ayatollah Khamenei, while proclaiming the outline of the economy of resistance 6 years ago, had stressed, if Islamic Iran, having exorbitant spiritual and material potentials, rich and diverse reserves and resources, vast infrastructures, and more important than all, enjoying committed and efficient manpower with firm resolve for progress, follows the native and scientific economic model, stemming from the revolutionary and Islamic culture, which is the same as the economy of resistance, will not only overcome problems and force the enemy, which has been arrayed against this great nation by imposition of a full-scale economic war, to fail and retreat, but will also be able, in a world of increasing hazards and uncertainties originated in uncontrollable developments such as financial, economic, political crises, to preserve the country's achievements in different fields, continue progress, materialize ideals, constitutional principles, and the 20-year plan document materialized economy that relies on knowledge and technology, based on justice, is endogenous, extrovert, dynamic, and advancing, so that it manifests a role model for economic system in Islam. In view of this, the leader has pointed out basic recommendations in the field of economy in his statement of the second phase of the revolution, which, if put into practice, they will empower the economy to the extent that it will be impenetrable and indomitable against the external shocks. Iran, with 68 minerals, stands at 10th rank globally in terms of diversity of these reserves. Meanwhile, with the exploration and identification of nearly 60 billion tons of mineral reserves, 40 billion tons of which are definitive and the rest is possible, ranks 15th in the world. This can contribute to the growth of production in the year of leap in production. Majid Wafai Far, director of the Research Center of Iran's Minerals, maintains that, with regards to the U.S. illegal sanctions and the reduction of oil prices, leap in production is one of the major plans that can decrease crude sale. He says, Iran enjoys good capacities and infrastructures in steel production, heavy industries, aluminum, lead and zinc, which have prepared the circumstances for a surge in production. After the U.S. illegal withdrawal from the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, otherwise known as the Iran nuclear deal, serious sanctions were exercised on Iran's metal and mineral industries. The reason is quite clear, as these industries are the backbone of the national power and ability. Since 2019, Iran's mineral industries, including electrode, aluminum powder, copper, gold, and iron, have been sanctioned 4 times. Yet these illegal and inhuman sanctions and threats have turned into opportunities. Last year, Iran experienced good growth in production, exports, and employment in the mineral sections. More than $3.5 billion worth of projects in the field of mineral industries, such as the sections affiliated to Golgohar, Mubarakeh, Chador Malu, South Aluminum, etc., became operational while creating jobs for over 10,000 youth. The acceleration of implementation of development projects in steel, copper, aluminum, lead, zinc, and gold, and putting fresh projects into the production domain are good steps in the leap in production.
The debate.
and welcome to Debate. I'm Marcia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif says Iran will never renegotiate the JCPOA and that the United States must rescind all sanctions in order to return to the agreement. He added that the U.S. must make the move because it is the country which left the agreement in the first place. This at the same time that the IAEA chief is visiting Iran. Tehran is set to stop its voluntary cooperation, allowing IAEA snap inspection in 2 days. Stay with us as we take a look at what all this means in this debate.
The clock is ticking as the Iranian government is preparing to implement a parliamentary law to cease the voluntary implementation of the additional protocol to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. The protocol calls for unannounced inspections by the International Atomic Energy Agency of Iran's nuclear sites. Those snap inspections will now be suspended when the Iranian legislation comes into force Tuesday. The move is the latest step Iran has taken in response to the failure of the European signatories to the 2015 nuclear deal to fulfill their commitments. Iran had demanded the Europeans make up for the 2018 U.S. withdrawal from the deal and its reimposition of sanctions. In an exclusive interview with Press TV, Iran's top diplomat said the law is in line with the nuclear agreement known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA.
This is what we can do in accordance with paragraph 36 of the JCPOA, which enables Iran to take remedial action against failure by other members of the JCPOA to implement their obligations.
Zarif also slammed the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden for continuing the policy of sanctions against Iran.
The problem is, U.S. is addicted to sanctions. U.S. is addicted to pressure. U.S. is addicted to bullying.
And this is a stance over Washington's return to the JCPOA.
Well, the United States will not be able to rejoin the JCPOA before they remove the sanctions.
Zarif added that Iran will seek compensation after Washington rejoins the nuclear deal.
Commit, act, meet. First we need commitment. We haven't seen it. Then we need action, removal of sanctions. Then we will meet. When we meet, we will raise compensation. We have lost about $1,000 billion, $1 trillion, at least directly and indirectly because of imposition of U.S. sanctions since 2018.
Crippling economic sanctions.
Zarif took a jab at the U.S. for its so-called maximum pressure campaign launched by former President Donald Trump. The Iranian foreign minister said the campaign targeting his country has been a failure. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken told the BBC on Friday that the policy has produced no results. Now, it's up to the White House to go ahead with a failed policy or reverse course in dealing with Iran.
I'd like to welcome my guests to this debate out of London, historian and journalist Marcus Papadopoulos, also an author, and out of New York, Frederick Peterson, Senior U.S. Congressional Defense Advisor. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start off with Marcus. Your take on what is going on right now. We know that the IAEA chief is here in Iran at this time, perhaps trying to get some type of compromise, although the Iranian side is abided by law now to actually back away from the cooperation of voluntarily allowing those snap inspections. Your take on the possible effect of this, and what do you think that the IAEA at this point in time expects from Tehran?
I think I should first of all say that irrespective of whether a Republican or Democrat is sitting in the White House, the core objective of American foreign policy will always remain the same. And that core objective is centered on preserving the American empire and strengthening the American empire. preserving and strengthening by all means necessary, including economic warfare and also military invasions. And a country such as Iran, which is in an extremely geostrategic part of the world and pursues an independent foreign policy, will always be a target for American foreign policy makers. Now, turning to the JCPOA, the Americans left the deal. The Europeans have remained steadfast in their commitment to the deal. However, the Europeans have not compensated for the American withdrawal. As regards Iran, the Iranians have complied with every agreement laid out in the JCPOA. So, if the Americans, under Joe Biden, wish to return to the JCPOA, the onus is on them and them only to lift the sanctions, the severe sanctions that America placed on Iran under Donald Trump. Because Iran has, as I said, complied fully with the Iran nuclear deal. And secondly, Iran is a self-respecting country. America left the agreement, therefore, for America to return, it has to lift those sanctions. But alas, the Americans will not lift those sanctions. Why? Because America, whether America is led by someone like Donald Trump or someone like Joe Biden, is committed to destroying the Iranian revolution, to subjugating the Iranian people, and to returning Iran to how it was during the days of the Shah.
Okay, stay with me, Marcus.
Vassal state.
Stay with me. I would definitely pick up on a few points you've made, but let me get our other guest, Frederick, in on this conversation. Frederick, you heard what Marcus said, that basically it doesn't make a difference if it's a Trump administration or a Biden administration, Republican or Democrat. Basically, the goal is to continue the empire no matter what the stakes are. So that basically what he's saying is that the United States really does not want the existence of the Islamic Republic, and that's the root of the problem. Your take?
Well, the good professor shows a profound misunderstanding, either correct, there's a feedback here, but at any rate, what he does is speaks of American empire. There is no such thing as American empire. America is the antithesis of empire. The American ideal is what is offered to the world, and American preservation and protection of the freedom that we have and that our allies have, and that the freedom to which all people aspire around the world. Now, that is not for export. It is for protection. By that I mean it is not to be imposed. You don't impose freedom upon others, but you protect others that reach up for their freedom and request, and you certainly protect your own.
Okay, now, okay, Frederick, wait. There's a whole lot. I have to stop you. I have to stop you, Frederick. There's a whole lot that you have just said. Hopefully you don't have too much feedback, yes, that you can hear
certainly
me right now. When you talk about that, to protect your own and freedom, and
you can't
enforce freedom on others. I mean, we're getting on a totally different topic than a JCPOA, but I have to jump in here with, let me just say, when I talked to the Iranian foreign minister today, Mohammad Javad Zarif, he talked about $1 trillion in damage, the very least financially for the United States. Basically, the Obama and the Trump administration basically not living up to their agreements. So where's the freedom? Where's the fairness? Where is basically abiding by its agreements that you're talking about this United States in that way?
Well, my first remark was to address a remark that the other guest said. However, let me say that I and the Iranian government and the people around the world should aspire to the development of peaceful use of nuclear power development, particularly because it is a magnificent generator of power at a very low price, a very low cost to the environment, and Iran has lost a tremendous amount of assets, both time, money, and power in having their project delayed. If this project, the bottom line here is, if this project to develop nuclear power for peaceful use in Iran is the legitimate means for the nuclear discussions that we're having, they will find a ready, willing, and able partner, both in the previous administration, they would have, and they will, I am confident, in this administration. But, the big but is that nuclear power may have multiple uses, some which are not peaceful. And if those multiple uses that are outside the grounds of the JCPOA are not in the intention of Iran or any other government, then put them on the table.
Okay.
Have
legitimate means of inspection to ensure those who are left unconfident. We're getting on a totally different topic. We're talking about the JCPOA that's already been negotiated, already been agreed to, already the United States accepted this. We're talking about that. And then you're saying that they have to put it on the table. Iran hasn't left the JCPOA. Iran didn't actually lived up to its agreements. We're talking about Washington that hasn't lived up to its agreements. Let me turn to Marcus. Marcus, there just seems to be a very hegemonic perspective that comes out of Washington and its supporters when dealing with a country like Iran, when dealing with a country that is standing up for its independence. So your perspective in general, how does a country or an independent country dealing with an entity like the United States, how can it even guarantee any type of agreement? Because we saw what happened with this 2015 agreement. Even the Obama administration from the beginning did not implement it in the way that they said they did. So it's not just Trump, it's Obama, it's Trump, and now it's Biden.
Well, first of all, let me say that the analysis put forward by the American guest constituted nothing more than simple-minded analysis, and I should also add, very peculiar analysis. Perhaps he should visit the slave markets in Tripoli, Libya, and tell the sub-Saharan slaves there about American freedom. Perhaps he should take a visit to Damascus or another Syrian city and sit down with the families who have lost husbands or sons or brothers to ISIS and Al-Qaeda, terrorist groups which were armed and trained and financed by the American government. Now, returning to the matter in hand, the Iran nuclear deal, there is nothing more that Iran can do as regards complying with this deal. As I said moments ago, the onus is completely with the American government. If the American government wants to return to it, then it needs to rescind the sanctions that Trump placed on Iran. Because why should a country which initially signed up to agreement and then left the agreement be allowed to return if its presence to the agreement is detrimental? The situation has changed dramatically concerning the JCPOA since it came into force in 2015. And you ask me about how Iran can respond to America. Well, Iran knows how to respond to American aggression. The Iranian people have been strengthening their country for 42 years now since the Iranian Revolution. And Iran in 2021 is at its most strongest. Iran today enjoys a strategic partnership with Russia. Therefore, Iran is even in a more better position to say to the Americans, if you do not do this, then you do not return to the Iran nuclear deal. And what are the Americans going to do? The Americans will simply attempt to asphyxiate the Iranian economy. The Americans will keep on increasing their military presence in the Persian Gulf. The Americans will continue arming MEK terrorists in Albania and helping to facilitate their arrival into Iran or close to Iranian borders. So nothing is really going to change. I only wish the Europeans would show more of a backbone and help to ensure that the JCPOA is able to survive and survive in the long term.
Well, let me pick up right there. Frederick, what's your take about the European side of things? Because we saw the United States actually leaving the JCPOA, and we saw the Europeans basically giving in to America's bullying and not allowing actually their companies to deal freely with Iran. Your take on the European side of things right now with the JCPOA agreement. Can the Europeans act individually as independent countries, or basically do they have to acquiesce to whatever Washington tells them to do?
Well, let me add a very simple comment to your previous guest's assertion of that he prefers simplicity, apparently. I'm an American Marine. I've been in spirit and in brotherhood to Tripoli from sea to shining sea. We know what it is to assist people who are laboring under oppression. However, this JCPOA is not about oppression. It's about, and should be about, and at its heart is about the delivery of power to people. I'm talking about nuclear power at a market price that will be elevating to the entire region and to all. To claim that Iran now suddenly has Russia as an ally is not an asset that you bring to the table. It's a subliminal threat saying that Iran has become a vassal of Russian foreign policy and now is cooperating to do what precisely? We are talking about a good faith reach to develop power for a country and a region that is safe, affordable, clean, and efficient. And we are willing to, you will find even this administration, which has certainly some fundamental differences with the previous, there is an opportunity, both in the past and in the future, for a good faith reaching for this development to make the JCPOA work with the proper inspections, the proper motivation on both sides, I should say, not to impose anything upon Iran, but to expect from Iran full cooperation and inspections that will guarantee the security of their people, of the region, and of the
Frederick,
world.
This
is not too much to ask.
Frederick,
it's a natural expectation.
Well, Frederick, hopefully you can hear me.
So,
you're not having any extra noise in your ear. Frederick, stay with me. I want to ask you then, when you talk about extra as far as Iran cooperating, and of course we know that Iran has been cooperating, Iran has gone beyond actually its responsibility with the JCPOA, and that's what we're talking about with the IAEA chief here now. Basically, Iran is going to back off of some of that extra cooperation, for example, letting them have snap inspections whenever they want it, IAEA inspectors. It really wasn't part of the JCPOA, but you talked about as far as regional security. What about Israel? Why doesn't the United States talk about Israel that has nuclear bombs that no one is actually inspecting them? If the United States is really worried about regional security, then what about Tel Aviv? Marcus, I only have about a minute. Your overall take on where this is going with this JCPOA, with the perspective that the United States has and basically the Europeans giving in to Washington, what has to give? Where do you see it going?
America will not rescind the Trump-era sanctions on Iran. America will continue its policy of attempting to undermine the Iranian revolution in the hope that Iran will one day be a client state of Washington's, as it was under the Shah. And at the same time, Iran will remain the strong country it has become economically and militarily as a result of the Iranian revolution. As regards to the guest in America, I would have more respect for him if he simply came out and said that he wishes to see countries such as Cuba, Venezuela, and Iran subjugated by the American Empire. The fact that he doesn't means I don't have an ounce of respect either for him or for his views. And as regards the Israelis, well, perhaps he would like to explain his stance on how Israel openly treated, wounded Al-Qaeda terrorists in Israeli military hospitals. Al-Qaeda terrorists who not only massacred Syrian civilians, but massacred Americans in New York on 9/11. How does he feel about Israel having treated those wretched, diabolical human beings? Perhaps he can answer that.
Okay, well, unfortunately, it has to be on another show because we are out of time. Appreciate both of you being with us on this debate. Marcus Papadopoulos, historian, journalist, and author. Out of London, Frederick Peterson, senior U.S. Congressional Defense Advisor. Out of New York. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marcia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Hope to see you right here next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful, my dear brothers and sisters in Islam, Salaamu Alaikum wa Rahmatullahi wa Barakatuh. We come to you today with another special program, Light Upon Light. Today is the auspicious birthday anniversary of Imam Jawad alayhi salam, the one who is most well known for his generosity among the Ahlul Bayt. So we would like to express our congratulations to all of you on this occasion. And we would like to invite you to stay with us in this conversation. My honorable guest today is Dr. Radia Batul Najafi. Salaam alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Congratulations on this occasion of Eid.
Thank you so much for you too.
And thank you for being here. So inshallah, today we're going to talk about Imam Jawad alayhi salam. As you know, Jawad means generous. And we know that all of the Ahlul Bayt, they had a lot of generosity. One of the main features that they were most well known for was the fact that they were very giving to the poor and needy people. So what does Jawad mean in like the Arabic technical term? And why was Imam Jawad most known for this feature?
Beautiful question. And I think we can connect a lot and do tawassul to this great Imam by knowing more about this beautiful title. I always remember the way Imam Radha alayhi salam, he would write letters for his very young son, Imam Jawad, in Medina, because Imam was in Tus, Mashhad, yeah, in Iran. And his son was only 3 years old when he left him. Mm-hmm. So he would write to him that, oh, my son Jawad, you have to use the gate, the door, because his house would have many doors to use for going out. So Imam would say, you have to use the common door, in the door which opens to the street where so many people are, like, crowded
open
over there,
public.
And you have to put some dirham and dinar and money in your pockets, and you have to distribute between people. So this habit of generosity, as we have hadith by Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, as-sakha'u shajaratun fil jannah. Just I love it that, you know, the generosity would manifest maybe even now, definitely in Jannah, in a shape, in a form of a tree. So, even this is the hadith that, you know, no one can enter to the Jannah. It has written on the door of the gate of Jannah that no one can enter the heaven without having the beautiful quality of generosity and mm-hmm. sakhawat. So Imam Jawad alayhi salam, he would just, you know, give and distribute the money and his definitely wisdom in a very, very young age. And that was maybe one of the reasons that he was known as a Jawadul A'imma, mm-hmm. in a sense that young age, and because he was the first Imam who had reached to the status of Imamate in this very, very young age. Like,
how
he was only
was he?
Seven or eight.
So was he the youngest Imam?
Exactly. Yeah, later on we had some, but he was the first youngest Imam to reach to the status of Imamate, and the youngest Imam who has been died, like martyred, Shaheed also, both. So this was something really outstanding. And one more thing, because so many people had doubt about the position of Imamate of Imam Jawad, and he faced a very critical time in his time because of Imam Radha alayhi salam, because Imam Radha was above 40 mm-hmm. when still he didn't have any child, mm-hmm. and many people have doubt.
He had no children or no sons.
No children. Yeah, like, you know, I say the test of Ibrahim Khalilullah, mm-hmm. or Prophet Ibrahim,
yeah.
you know, the same imtihan Ibrahimi, the same imtihan and
test
has been passed by Imam Radha alayhi salam. So therefore people had so many doubt that maybe Imam himself is Imam or not, because he's not having any child, mm-hmm. any son even. And then when Imam Jawad alayhi salam, he came to this earth, still people had doubt because of his skin color, mm-hmm. you know, and that maybe this is again test for ummah, for people, for followers, that why they're having doubt. But still they have so many doubts about Imam, and therefore Imam Radha alayhi salam,
what about
said,
his skin color?
Yeah, his skin color was darker.
Imam Radha?
No, Imam Jawad.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And there were so many beautiful stories that, you know, unfortunately they would bring the expert
to see if this
exactly
is his son really or not.
Son or not. You know, like, that much it was serious issue for mm.